21-155. Then we'll go down to 21-158, 21-159. And we'll go down to 2202 and 2203. We'll go back at the top and work our way down. All right, so we'll call this meeting to order. Please remember to turn off or mute all electronic devices. And Dr. Wright, would you please do the roll call?
Yes. Dr. Byrne?
Here.
Ms. Krieger?
Here.
Ms. Frost?
Here.
Dr. James?
Here.
Mr. Lohe?
Here.
Dr. Nosley?
Here.
Ms. Solomon?
Here.
Dr. Thompson?
Here.
And Dr. Wright is here. We do have quorum.
All right, so we'll start in on initial investigative reviews. And first up is case 21-155. Tracy, would you read us the summary, please?
Yes, case 21-155, the woman at the city of Nelson Lake, the respondent is Bo Bedell, BBM. On June 9th, 2021, Sam, a 10-year-old male labrador retriever, was presented to the respondent for following and exploratory changes. The dog is currently being treated for dilated cardiac. Respondent examined the dog and got him to the stage. No medical intervention was needed at that time. The dog was discharged from the ATV monitoring at home, and it was recommended to have the dog further assessed by the primary care veterinarian if needed. On June 14th, 2021, the dog was presented to Surprise Animal Hospital for a respiratory effort. Diagnostic and treatment were performed. And due to the dog's condition, possible acute congestive heart failure, the dog was transferred to an emergency facility for continued care. The dog is transferred to Blue Pearl. The dog was examined. Hospitalization for stabilization was recommended, and an estimate was provided to complainant. Complainant declined, and the dog was to Miami and lies the dog. And the committee concluded that no violation of the veterinary practice occurred, and was merely consecutive of the board. Dismiss this issue of no violation. The motion was approved with a vote of 4-1 with Dr. Karen Bowers.
Okay, we have no respondent. Mr. Stoll monitoring?
Yes, sir.
And we have the complainant here. Would you care to address the board? Please state your name and record.
Steve Vallad, V-A-L-A-D.
Thank you. I give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Well, last time I was here, I was made aware that Mr. Bodell said that there was no video that I offered him, which is a lie. He knows it and I know it. He had my dog for 2 hours. The main reason was breathing. He didn't so much as put a stethoscope on my dog, and if he did, I would consider him incompetent. All he noticed was him getting up after sitting for 2 hours, and he's got arthritis and dysplasia, and that was his only concern. The dog walked in on his own power and ran out on his own power. My concern was not the atrophy or the problem in his hips, it was breathing. He states it right here on his receipt, breathing. I don't know what he was looking for, but it looked like he was looking at the wrong end of the dog with these AFAS and TFAS. He was very arrogant. He was moody. I don't know if he was the only doctor there. They were busy. He just totally disregarded my request to check his breathing. I mentioned I had a video. He said he didn't need a video. He said that he's been monitoring him for 2 hours. His breathing's fine. Everything's fine. And I mentioned to him I thought he might have kennel cough. And he said if he does have kennel cough, all they can do is give him some suppressant. Now, who's they? Isn't he they? This guy's an arrogant, moody idiot. And I'd like to hear different from somebody. I don't see how he... can't even be a veterinarian when he didn't so much as put a stethoscope on my dog. You know, I feel that he took the responsibility to treat my dog and failed to meet professional standards for the care by his incompetence and carelessness and negligence. He should be sanctioned and fined. Mr. Bodell did not perform with the same normal skill and judgment that would be accepted of the average or reasonably competent vet. I can't prove what was said on the phone call, but it was a 10-minute phone call. I can prove that. And I assure you, I have nothing in common with this guy. We were talking about my dog the whole time. He just refused to treat him. I don't know why. I have no idea. He was just a jerk. That's about all I got.
If I may have one question, I don't know whether I can see it in here easily or not. How long between this visit and when the dog passed away?
From the visit with Bodell?
Yes.
To the Surprise Animal Hospital? 4 days.
4 days.
I have video, I don't know if you all seen him, but after he left there, day after day, I mean, you could see he was dying in my living room. And when Surprise Animal called me, because Mr. Bodell told me I should get him back on Novox. So I called them, the Surprise, said, hey, I need Novox. They called me on a Sunday and said that they need to see Sammy. And at that time, I said, could you please see him as soon as possible? Because, I mean, my dog's dying. He can't breathe. I don't know how this guy missed it. I don't think he looked. I don't think they knew what my dog was in there for. And he's such an arrogant jerk that when I did mention, hey, I got a video, he just yelled at me. I'd be like, I don't need to see your video. You know, he said he's been monitoring for 2 hours. How did he miss this? I don't think he has much experience, and if he was the only doctor there, he was overwhelmed. And I just got caught in a perfect storm. That's about it.
All right, let me step back. And Dr. Wright, you are the lead.
Yes, thank you. So, I mean, going through and reading and looking at everything, is always a hard case with heart disease in dogs. I would definitely like the opinion of the other vets, because after reading through the response from the respondent, it does say on there that we assessed, we looked, we saw, but I noticed on there it says that we were having increased respiratory rate when walking around the treatment area, but then we were finding rest again. And so there was some indication of an issue there. Now, we did do, it says, a thoracic point of care ultrasound, looking at the heart, looking for pleural effusion, pericardial effusion, no signs of the lungs, but nothing about x-rays in there. Would x-rays have changed anything? I don't know. There's a question there. With heart disease, unfortunately, it's always something that's going to decompensate over time. And heart disease is typically a fatal thing in most patients that are on treatment. Even with congestive heart failure treatment, I mean, a lot of times you're in a 6 to 8 month prognosis when you're reading the research. So this is unfortunately not an unexpected outcome for heart disease, but is there any failure in the offering of radiographs and that kind of stuff? So definitely would like an opinion there from anybody.
Well, I would second that. I mean, I think these are tough cases for sure. I think my biggest concerns were potentially around the communication, the lack of watching the video, the lack of paying attention to, because cardiac cases, you're not going to always see in the clinic what they're seeing at home. You have to depend on what's going on in the history. And I don't see why an owner would take the time to get a video and not tell them about it. Like, that doesn't make any sense. So I'm just kind of, I mean, I know that the doctor said he did not know about the video, but I just feel like that's a little bit weird. And, you know, I think there was more going on. I mean, I personally feel like there was something more going on in this dog that was missed, but I don't know how you can say that. I guess my biggest issue is that I don't feel like they took the time to look. I feel like they didn't offer x-rays. maybe they monitored the dog for 2 hours, but we don't even know what went on during that monitoring, and it would have been helpful to get a little bit more. I listened to the audio, but I didn't hear more about that exact 2 hours and what was going on during that. I heard in the audio, you know, some of the text triaging for severity in this case, and maybe that played a role into the text didn't feel like the dog was as severe based on current clinical presentation, but that's where I, you know, a doctor needs to step in and look at this a little bit more. So, I mean, I definitely have concern about this. I feel like it warrants a little bit more questions.
So I'll make a motion to move this to an informal.
A motion on the floor and a second to move to informal. Any further discussion? Seeing none, let's take a vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That motion passes. 2155 will move to an informal. Thanks for being here today. Next up.
That's it.
Yep, that's it. So we'll move this to an informal here.
Thank you.
I can explain to you about the process.
All right, so next up is two-back. So we have 2158, 2159. Trace, is this something the same?
No, this, well, there's difference in that the
Dr. Flannery, he's coming from MPI, he is the responsible manager for the classes. Okay. So we're doing one after the other, but we'll take them one at a time. So let's do
2158. Sure. So case 21158, the complainant is Aaron Mulroney, and the complainant is Kevin Burns. CBN, question 4, 2021, all of the basic serum treatment evidence about Dawson was presented to Dr. Burns after being bitten by a rattlesnake. The dog is hospitalized for treatment and monitoring. No antivenom was administered due to Dr. Burns' evaluation of the dog. Later that evening, the dog was sent home with instructions to go to an emergency facility if the dog became worse. The dog passed away in the early morning hours. And case 21159, Dr. Celeste Planner, do you have the summary is the same, the complainant is the same, and Dr. Planner is responsible veterinarian for the premises. The committee concluded that no violations of the Veterinary Practice Act had occurred, and it was moved and seconded to the board to dismiss these issues with no violations.
We have no respondent for either case, Mr. Stoll, monitoring both?
Yes, sir.
And we do have the complainant for both. Do you care to address the board? Please state your name for the record.
Karen Mulroney.
And your witness?
Bonnie Phillips, my daughter.
I will give you up to 5 minutes to address the board.
Okay. I'm here today for answers and accountability.
As to why my 6-year-old miniature dachshund Olive had to die from a snake bite when she could have survived had she been given anti-venom. My dog Olive was bitten on the head by a diamondback rattlesnake on June 4, 2021, Friday morning in Clark Hill, Arizona, while I was visiting my sister. My sister and I rushed her to Air Park Animal Hospital 10 minutes away. The receptionist Taylor told us they would assess Olive's condition, but that we may need to take Olive to an emergency vet in Prescott or Flagstaff, which we were willing and able to do. I signed medical consent forms and anti-venom consent forms. Dr. Burns at Air Park Animal Hospital chose to keep her and perform blood work throughout the day. We called Air Park several times throughout the day and were told each time Olive was stable and doing well and the blood work looked good, but Olive looks sad. Dr. Burns told us to pick her up at the end of the day, and that Dr. Burns wanted to talk to us about Olive's appearance. When we got to Air Park, Olive was swollen to twice her size and didn't even look like the same dog. Dr. Burns assured us that this was normal. Dr. Burns told us to watch for vomiting, diarrhea, and shortness of breath, as these would be symptoms to rush her to an emergency vet. She sent us home with gabapentin capsules, 100 milligrams for pain. Olive never exhibited these symptoms, but died in my arms at 1:30 a.m.
They did say to give her one of the pills as they got home.
Yeah.
And I thought that was a lot, a big dosage for her.
So I'm wanting answers as to, one, why wouldn't anti-venom be given to a small dog bitten by a diamondback rattlesnake so she could have a chance? And why was she kept all day at Air Park Animal Hospital blowing up like a balloon? Could it be that Air Park wanted to keep Olive so they could charge me for the entire day? Why was I told throughout the day that Olive was stable and doing well but looked sad when in fact she was swelling with poison as the day went on? Why wasn't I told when I rushed Olive in Friday morning that Air Park doesn't keep pets overnight? Had we known that, we would have taken her to an emergency vet. Why did Air Park and Dr. Burns choose not to administer anti-venom when they had me sign consent form? Why would a 15-pound dog not need anti-venom so she could at least have a chance to survive? Why was Dr. Burns not present Saturday morning when I took my dead dog back to question her then? I sat with my dog dead in my lap for 30 minutes before Dr. Flannery came in. She said, "How did it go last night?" I said, "Not good. She died." Why was Dr. Flannery, owner of Air Park, so unbelievably rude when I questioned her as to why anti-venom wasn't given? She answered with woulda, coulda, shoulda. So I'm here asking you all why my 6-year-old dog, Olive, had to die. Anti-venom needs to be administered 3 to 4 hours after the bite. They could tell it was a big snake from the bite mark. I talked to many vets and they all said they would have given the anti-venom. Without anti-venom treatment, your dog will suffer miserably, and smaller dogs may succumb to the effects of the toxins in the venom. The cornerstone of treatment is intravenous fluids, pain meds, and anti-venom. Most dogs are bitten on the head, although bites to the front legs are common.
This one too?
Yeah. And anti-venom sources have improved so that the current version imported from South America is very effective with minimal side effects. Smaller dogs need more vials than larger dogs since they are dealing with a relatively larger dose of venom. Although a typical human patient may receive as many as 10 to 20 vials of anti-venom, in our veterinary patients, 1 to 2 vials typically is effective, especially if given within several hours after the bite.
Thank you, Ms. Stepanak, and Dr. Wright, you are the lead on all of these cases.
Yes, thank you. So, going through and reading, unfortunately, ventilation cases are very difficult to deal with. You never know how much venom was given. Was it completely dry bite, which can happen in, I think, up to 20 or 30% of cases. You can have mild envenomation, and you can have full envenomation. Usually bites on the head, and an attack would be a lot quicker in progression than bites elsewhere in the body. It can take a while for venom to get up from the legs in a lot of cases, but head bites can go really problematic really fast if you have envenomation. So we saw the dog was supposed to be stable about an hour post-envenomation, and over early hospitalization was not showing indications of a need for anti-venom. Anti-venom is not a benign product. It's not something like an antibiotic where you just give it and go home and live your life and you're really fine. I've had animals go in anaphylactic shock from giving anti-venom. So it's not something that we can just give lightly, give a shot, and you go about your day. That's where 24-hour hospitalization and those kind of things are really needed. Unfortunately, in certain areas of the state, there's no ready access to emergency clinics. This is an unfortunate situation, but this dog passed away long after the initial bite. So was this issue from ventilation alone? Was there more things going on? Was there some kind of bacterial infection that was setting in that was causing problems? There's a lot of questions, but I can't say alone that not getting antivenin is going to be the problem here. It's an unfortunate case, it's an unfortunate situation, but you know, I've seen that statute violation based on the records and everything was done here. Do you have any other opinions?
Yeah, I mean, I think in hindsight, as we look at it backwards, right, you're like, well, you should have sent them to the emergency facility, they were willing to go, they could have gone, maybe that would have changed things, you would have had a longer time to monitor, but when you put yourself in the position of this veterinarian who's standing there trying to help clients and has all day to monitor the dog, and you should have seen something in that amount of time, should there have been an issue, I can see why she chose to keep the dog there. So, I mean, I feel like, yes, in hindsight, it looks like, yes, the antivenin should have been given. Yes, the dog should have gone to the emergency clinic, but you didn't know that at the time. I was a little concerned about the amount of swelling that this dog had during the day. And
I have a picture of it.
You know, like whether or not that would have changed how this vet handled it, because while it says that the dog was stable, I would say if you're continuing to swell, you're not stable. So that was probably my biggest concern, was that documented and missed, or was that attributed to, we're not concerned about it? I don't know, but that's my concern in this case.
Yeah, I would agree with that. When you're deciding whether to give the antivenin or not, I think you have to look at the total case. And so we did have a dog that had considerable swelling. With dry bites, you usually don't get that. Some, but not a lot. We also had she ran two CDCs, and we had two platelet counts. And the second one was lower than the first. So I wonder about that trend. True, it wasn't in a critical stage on that first or second one, but were we trending down? So if I look at the total, the swelling, the platelets, the history, in this case, in my experience, I would have given the antivenin. Again, at the time the dog was released, we were pretty stable. I wish that the communication would have been, you need to go to the emergency clinic. Not go there if she gets worse. You need to go.
And we would have done that.
So that's where I had some questions.
We would have done that, but they didn't tell us that until we picked her up that night.
I'm sorry, your participation is over with your client. It was actually eating. So we're going to discuss case and decide whether we're going to go forward.
Well, I agree that, especially with the emergency clinic so far away, that you need to kind of give owners a heads up that, hey, this might happen at 5:00. We might decide that we're not stable and we need to go, like, be prepared for these things. But again, I do think hindsight is changing how we look at it a little bit. And if you step back and say, if I were presented with this not knowing, would I have done the same thing? And I think that's a hard call. It's a hard call.
You know, like some of the cases go bad real fast, and you know, you're going to be some of those little hard ones. It's like, it's just really hard to practice. It comes in and it can be hard sometimes. So, I mean, do you have additional questions?
I mean, I would have liked to have heard more from the veterinarian on the swelling and why that wasn't, you know, taken into account, and potentially, you know, how the conversation went with the hospitalization. That's probably the whole of my questions. And it might change. I mean, you think about, would it change? Yeah, I mean, if she was noting that, yes, this dog was continuing to swell and did nothing about it, I doubt that's the case. I would think she would have done something about it, but I don't know.
It'd be nice if there was a presentation this morning to kind of answer some of that stuff.
So, for the veterinarians, tell us maybe a little bit more about what causes this swelling. What about the venom causes the swelling?
So there's different components of the venom itself. There's coagulation issues, there's neurotoxicities, and there's necrotic factor tissues. So every snake is a little bit different on how much of each issue they're going to have with their venom. But the local necrosis is usually kind of the antihistamines, maybe the swelling. This is my experience. It's a different thing.
It's a demon.
Yeah. Then you can see the
necrosis. It's a demon that causes the swelling.
Yeah. And then, like I said, it's kind of a continuing factor. And then a lot of times over time, you can start seeing some other issues happen. Sometimes it's just swelling and it goes away. So it really depends on the components of the venom that was from the snake.
My experience with snake bites is for large animals. So, you know, you're not going to get any venom.
Yeah.
It's too expensive. And then you have to get it too much. But you have the standard protocol, because it's usually in the nose, because they want to sniff and see what it is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're cutting off the guardrails to keep their airway open.
Yeah.
But it's kind of way of seeing, and it's supportive care.
Yeah, and I've had some that do great support. I mean, I haven't treated a huge amount, so I'll tell you, because I'm not an emergency itself, I have emergency care all the time. I've had some that do well with just support care, some that need the advent, and like I said, some that need the advent and don't do well. So they can really run the gamut, they just don't know how they're going to respond until they respond.
It's always a judgment call.
Yeah. So if there's any more questions to help with that answer, we will change much there, letter of concern. Or communication violation potential. I think about communication violation, maybe the most that you should really get. I don't know, maybe you can get it more in there.
I mean, I think I would feel more comfortable talking to the doctor before doing a violation, because I just don't know, right? Like, we just don't have that. I mean, I know what was submitted, but I don't have some of the questions that I would have.
So how is it truly presented to the clients?
Yeah, and hearing it is always a little bit different.
So I'll make a motion for an informal then, as we can seek your information on this.
Second.
Your motion for a second to move 21-158 to an informal. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes 21-158. We'll go to an informal, and now we have 21-159. The responsible veterinarian for the premise.
Okay. Nothing to say beforehand, correct? Tracy? All done. Okay. So on this one, as the responsible veterinarian, there is minimal interaction, communication, but no medical interaction, beyond consulting. I would make the motion to dismiss the violation.
Second.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 21-159. Any further discussion?
My only concern is around the communication. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you have an owner whose dog died overnight that your practice saw the day before, and you walk into the exam room and say coulda, woulda, shoulda, I find that to be very concerning. That's not consoling an owner. That's not addressing their concerns. That's not helping matters. And I do think that that inflamed things here. And if you had handled it and talked to them about all the things that we just talked about you don't always know. We tried to do this. This is why we did this. We may not have even been here today. But again, because they're not here, I don't know how that conversation went. I'm only hearing the one side. But I mean, I think there's a letter of concern warranted as far as your communication with clients and ensuring that you're answering questions and handling things in a professional manner. I don't necessarily think I would say it would go to an informal or a violation, but I do feel like that needs to be watched if that's what happened.
Well, that's the question of when we're not here for the actual presentation and they're not here today, so it is only one side visiting, a question of is that what happened or what, and we all know how what is said and what is perceived. So I mean, I'm not going to say that that was said, but because I wouldn't be surprised sometimes if it said, was it said in the very beginning, you walk in, and I know that, whatever. Or was this, okay, this conversation's been going on for 30 minutes, we're not getting anywhere.
And because we don't know, she could have come. She had the option of coming to answer these questions. She chose not to come. All I can go off of is the statement of what we have here.
There was an audio of that conversation.
I kind of heard.
Kind of.
I wasn't overly comfortable with it. Yeah, that's kind of how I was too. I was like.
Does that call in a business decision? Don't attend people that just don't care about your business? Or is that an actual statute violation? It's a hard thing. That's.
I think to me it warrants a letter of concern. Not a violation, but a letter of concern. Like, you need to pay attention to how you're communicating with people.
I just don't know. I get hard, but it's like I said, in those situations, it's like any conversation can be taken as offensive too, and I don't know, I'm a little.
I think if somebody makes a motion, the rest of us are ready to go.
I'm not fine.
I would make a motion in the case of 159 to find no violations of our Practice Act or rules, but to send a letter of concern about ensuring that the clinic is using professional and courteous interchange with owners regarding their pets.
Second.
Motion of form second, send a letter of concern. Any further discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed?
I'll go with nay.
The ayes have it, and we'll issue a letter of concern in 21-159. Thank you for being here today. Next up, we have. Tracy, would you read us the summaries of those, please?
Yes, please. 2202, the complainant is Barry Gabriel, the respondent is Anna Bond, Indiana. On March 17, 2020, Lou Tess, a 15-year-old female domestic shorthair cat, was presented to Sean on first name and had the ambulance evacuated. Complainant reported the cat was urinating outside of the litter box and vocalizing in pain. Respondent examined the cat, recommended blood work, and fossil dental screening. Complainant declined. Ambulance were expressed and the cat was discharged. On April 2nd, 2020, the cat was presented to respondent to have the ambulance rechecked. A small amount of material was expressed. Again, blood work was recommended, which complainant declined. On April 23rd, 2020, the cat was presented to an emergency facility where the cat was diagnosed with chronic kidney disease. The cat was hospitalized until April 25th. Humane euthanasia was discussed and complainant elected to take the cat. And the committee concluded that the violation of the veterinary practice had not occurred and it was moved and seconded for instance this issue of the population. And the motion was approved with a vote of 5-0. On case 22-03, the complainant is the same, but the respondent is by the land of Indiana. And the summary of the case is the same. And the committee also, in this case, recommended that the board dismiss this issue of no violation, which was approved with a vote of 5-0.
So we have no respondent, nobody monitoring. And we do have a complainant, would you care to address the board?
I also want to address the board.
Please state your name for the record.
Eric Gabriel.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes to address the board.
All right, I want to just state up, I just like to state first that I am here to be truthful. I am not here to lie, and I am here because I am concerned about the welfare of the animals and how they were treated. And I am here to try to make sure that what happened with me is not repeated by the two veterinarians again. It also has come to my attention that I'm not the only person that's had a problem with the clinic. This has, that clinic does have some pretty serious problems if you're looking in the public, what the public is saying. Also, it has come to, it came to my attention in the committee meeting that it seems that there may have been a lot of falsification on the part of Anna Flockin, and that is actually something I am concerned with, and that is, you know, a whole nother situation that I'm trying to also deal with currently. I'd like to discuss with you the five of the reasons why the committee dismissed what I had to say. The first situation that the committee kind of had denied me, they had stated that there were no violations of the articles or statutes. So the section 32, 22, 32, subsection 11, malpractice, gross incompetence, gross negligence, that's against Anna Flockin, because when I went in there, she did not tell me anything about a blood test. She just told me that the cat's teeth needed to be cleaned and that the nail graft test had to be administered, and that is not true. Subsection 22, medical incompetence. Anna Flockin had only been out of veterinary school, not even for 2 years, and she had only been a veterinarian for a few months. So she did not have qualifications or experiences to be making the judgments, and that led to the problem. Subsection 14, signing a false affidavit. Anna Flockin gave the Pima County Courthouse paperwork. The paperwork, if you look at it and what I submitted, she plagiarized the hospital's information, and she passed that off as her own. And also in that affidavit, she goes on and on about things saying the hospital did, and if you read the hospital work, what Anna Flockin is saying is completely opposite of what the hospital said. Section 32, 22, 33, unprofessional and dishonorable conduct. Anna Flockin, she has not, you know, she never contacted me after the problem. Also with Mike Plank, he's the medical director, and I tried to speak with him, and he told me he did not care about the situation, did not care that the pet was dead. Section 2, need to notify Board of Change of Residence. So Anna Flockin left the state a long time ago before I even started the paperwork, and she never notified the board. Perjury. For giving legal authority, deliver fraudulent testimony. So that's to the Pima Court for D. So general provisions, there's R3-1107 change of residency, which she did not comply with. There's standards of Article 5 standards of practice, R3-11501 for ethical standards. Veterinarian shall show respect to the pet owner whom veterinarian services are provided and to the public through courteous verbal exchange and considered treatment. You know, I did not get any exchange with Anna Flockin about this problem at all. And Mike Lent, when I tried to talk with him about it, he didn't care about the situation with Anna Flockin. He didn't care about Anna Flockin actually lying to him about the situation. And he did not care about the pet dying. And those are the things he told me when I was talking to him. And then for number 9 of that, she's not supposed to make a false, Flockin made a false statement for altering a document. So also another thing the committee had stated that kind of the cat was going to die anyway, so it kind of wasn't a problem. This is not a wrongful death lawsuit or complaint. I never state that. This problem is about malpractice and negligence and lying and not being treated and not treating the clients properly. I did give Anna Falken overwhelming information about the kidney disease symptoms. She did not tell me anything about taking a blood test. She just told me the cat's, you know, the hand landed in the teeth. She did not attempt to make any new determinations. She did not work with me. She's never had any type of, you know, sorrow, remorse, never any responsibility. She's never, you know, written that she wants to try to correct things to make sure this kind of situation with me doesn't occur. There's, from the committee, there was this idea that both sides were being combative and disrespectful, and this created a situation in which neither of the two sides could understand each other. So that would have given her exemption. If that were the case, if there's a communication issue on that with Anna Falken, she should have been held accountable for that. That wasn't, though, the situation. Neither of the sides in any type of writing say there's a communication issue.
So you're well over your 5 minutes, so you wrap it up.
Okay, just, right, there's, you know, yeah, there's this, right, on with Anna Falken, on the paperwork that she writes, she doesn't state, she does kind of state in the concluding and then in the beginning what, like, that she kind of wanted me to do testing, but then when you read it, the whole body of her, her information, it says nothing about she's asking me to do tests. In her affidavit, she says nothing about blood work. That's a story that she's told you that's changed. And also in the affidavit she wrote to Pima County, she even gives herself away in the writing where in the second paragraph, she actually states that I agreed with everything she said, which is what I've been stating, you know, numerous times. So if I do so, like I'm saying, I have all my paperwork if you need to see anything, and I am here telling you the truth. I'm not lying. And I'm here to help the animals and make sure this situation doesn't happen any longer.
Thank you. Can you step back? And Ms. Frost, you are the lead.
Yes, I am. So I did read the complaint that was submitted along with the additional documentation of the visit with the practitioners that provided additional care along with the response from Dr. Falken. And there's a lot of layers to this, so I apologize if I don't address everything, but first of all, I'm very sorry for your loss. This, unfortunately, is something that doesn't have a great outcome. And I think that the statement made initially today was that this is for the welfare of the animals. And, you know, as far as what Dr. Falken provided, and what was charged for her and what was recommended, it appears that she did, you know, provide what, you know, was documented. As far as the additional care that was sought out, it looks like that was all provided appropriately too. So I think as far as the welfare of this particular patient, you know, I think that's in order. As far as other violations that are being that were listed, concerns, you know, this is a very emotional situation, and rightfully so, with the loss of the pet. However, it appears that it went way out of line. And reading this information, I was concerned for the safety of this veterinarian. So I'm so sorry, you know, for the loss. I just absolutely do not see a violation in this case, 2202. So I make a motion to dismiss with no violation.
Second.
Motion on the floor and a second to dismiss 2202. Any further discussion?
I think this is one of those cases where you're hearing two very different sides of the story, and we ultimately go back to the medical records and say, what was documented, what happened. And you see documentation of recommending a dental with preoperative blood work. You see an estimate of that saying, you have technicians confirming that that happened. Like, I think there could have been some miscommunication with the owner, but ultimately I think these things were recommended. So, I mean, in looking back at what was documented, I feel like the right things happened.
Well, the blood work was for the anesthesia.
You're part of the
town. Didn't say blood work.
You're done. Well, this part. Your part's over.
All right.
So we're discussing the case, whether we're going to move on or we're going to revise the DNA. He doesn't escort him right now. He just isn't speaking anymore. So the motion on the floor is to dismiss. We have a second. Any other discussion? Anybody on the phone?
No discussion.
Seeing none, all those in favor of dismissing 2202, say aye.
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 Opposed? That motion passes. 2202 is dismissed. And next up is the 2203.
Okay, so 2203 sounds like Dr. Rennett got tossed into this situation, at least from my reading the complaint and his response whenever there was an attempt to directly serve papers. And again, I don't know if I was reading into the passion from the complaint, but there was some very direct accusations that I'm not really sure, other than Dr. Lent, you know, being aware of the case. I don't know how to approach prevented this, honestly. And both sides, again, I could understand I'm being emotional, but again, I was worried because the conflict was being brought to the front door, and that's not safe or healthy in this situation. So I really couldn't even figure out what the true complaint was, other than the emotion aspect. So I can't find a violation, and I would make a motion to dismiss with no violation. Second.
Motion on the floor and second to dismiss 2203. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? That motion passes and 2203 is dismissed. Thank you for being here today.
You guys are just awful. Sir, you guys do an awful job.
You need to seek professional help. Nobody writes a 32-page dissertation on anal gland.
What are you talking about? Are you mad because I tried to prevent?
No, sir.
Sir,
no, sir. I think you need to. I really do.
I did not. Right. I was not told anything about a blood test. I was just told about the teeth.
All right. Come on, sir.
You guys should all just get new jobs. You shouldn't be bored people. I don't know what people can do.
So I'm happy to go outside.
Well, I just wanted to just state that. I don't know what people can do then to what the, if there's something that the vets can do that they'll get in trouble for.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
I'm happy to help you out, right? So that they can move on with their reasons.
You're all just terrible, terrible. You need to get new jobs because you can't tell when people are telling you the truth.
I understand that you're really upset about this, but this isn't the time to do this, so I'd be happy to talk to you outside so that the board can.
And all you board people just hanging your head.
If you don't mind stepping in.
Go.
Nobody has anything to say to me. Because if you have something, I'll be glad to hear it. I'm not here for you guys to be silent.
Sir, if you step outside, please.
I'd be happy to talk to you about your concerns outside the board.
Mm-hmm.